Good morning and welcome to Focus on Health, the weekly radio program where we talk about all the great things happening at Van Deese Medical Center. I am your host, Lori Foster, and on today's program, we will continue the discussion with our behavioral health professionals, sharing practical tips to support your kids as they head back to school. Before we get into our program, I do have several announcements I'd like to share. The August Seniors and Law Enforcement Together meeting, the acronym is SALT, will be held tomorrow, August 13th, beginning at 9 a.m. at the Stanhope Community Center in Stanhope. Refreshments will be served, and Van Deese Medical Center personnel will provide free blood pressure checks. The meeting will get underway at 9:30 with announcements from local law enforcement and officials from area agencies and upcoming events from throughout Hamilton County. The program is going to be a fantastic program. It will be presented by Bill Greenlee of Webster City, who will share his safari trip to Botswana earlier this year. Bill and his wife Josie toured the area and will share stories and photos of the trip. I do want to mention SALT meetings are free and open to the public. Meetings are held every other month at locations throughout Hamilton County. Tomorrow is a big day. We also have the Webster City Community Blood Drive going on. And as I mentioned on last week's program, blood donations are still needed. Just one donation can save or impact up to three local lives. Again, the Webster City Community Blood Drive is going on tomorrow from 12:30 to 5:30. It will be in the clinic boardroom at Van Deese Medical Center. Appointments are encouraged. You can go to lifeservebloodcenter.org or call the 800 number, which is 1-800-287-4903 to schedule an appointment. However, I do want to mention walk-ins are welcome, so if it works for you to come and donate, we certainly encourage it. And for all of our donors, you will receive a delicious cookie from Scooters here in Webster City and a coupon to be used 20% off towards one item at the gift shop at Van Deese Medical Center. Great place to shop. You shop, they give. Again, want to mention the blood drive tomorrow from 12:30 to 5:30. And then I'm very excited to share, we will be hosting a new program. We've held it before, but it's going to be offered once again this fall. It's our Better Choices, Better Health program. And this is Iowa's Chronic Disease Self-Management Program. It is a free, interactive, six-week workshop, and they meet Thursdays beginning September 17th through October 22nd from 9:30 in the morning until 12 o'clock noon at the hospital conference room at Van Deese Medical Center. Each session is led by two certified instructors designed to help participants gain confidence and take charge of their health. The program covers practical tools to manage ongoing health conditions while staying active. Some of those topics include communicating effectively with family, friends, and health professionals, techniques to address isolation, frustration, fatigue, and pain, tips for healthy eating and safe physical activity, and how to evaluate treatment options and create realistic action plans. Healthy snacks will be provided at each session. To register or learn more about the program, you can contact nurse and health coach Ashley Bubeck at 515-832-7885, or you can email her at abubeck@vandeestmc.org. And lastly, I do want to mention the 11th annual Van Deese Medical Center Foundation golf outing will be held Friday, September 25th at Briggs Woods Golf Course. This will feature a four-person best shot. We'll be playing nine holes. All the information about the tournament can be found on our website at vandeestmc.org or check out our Facebook page. There's opportunities to sponsor a team, to sponsor a hole. You could sponsor the music, which I definitely want to mention if you're not a golfer. We have live entertainment that will be provided by Day OK Jazz Project from 5 to 7 p.m. following the golf. That is free and open to the public, so there is something for everyone. We encourage you to register now. I certainly want to mention sponsorships need to be turned in by September 11th to be included in the promotional material. Again, plan to join us for the 11th annual golf outing Friday, September 25th at Briggswoods Golf Course. And with that, we are ready to start back in to our discussion about the transition to back to school. And we know it comes with a mix of emotions, excitement alongside stress and anxiety for students. I am so very happy to have behavioral health professionals, Mary Claire Lopez and Julie Trout, back with me today to talk about this topic. Good morning and welcome back, ladies.
Good morning. Thanks for having us back.
Yes, thank you. So glad to be here.
So glad to have you back. We covered a lot on last week's program, talking about preparing for a successful transition back to school, some common challenges that kids have, and we have so much more to cover. So we're just going to dive back in, and we're going to be talking first about teens and mental health. So let's talk about our teenagers. Do they experience back-to-school anxiety differently than younger children?
Yeah, I would say for sure. Younger kids tend to be more separation from parents versus teenagers. You're looking at more of the worry of, am I meeting my peer expectations? Am I meeting these achievement goals that I've set for myself or are put upon me or I put upon myself? I think that's more where you see the anxiety with the teenagers.
Absolutely. I think a lot of it, like Julie said, deals with peers. And I think there's a lot of pressure to fit in, to, you know, wonder who will my friends be? You know, what is my role going to be in this grade or in these sports or these activities that I'm participating in? So I definitely think it looks different as kids approach those teenage years.
Mm-hmm. And then the added complexity with teenagers, oftentimes I hear a lot that they're in social media and different mm-hmm. things like that, which puts another spin on that anxious piece to those kids as well.
Let's go right into that. So how can families help teenagers manage those expectations, especially when it comes to social media?
Yeah, I think it's hard. I definitely think it looks a little bit different for every family, probably depending on kind of what some of your family values are and then what guidelines you maybe have set for siblings or for other kids. I definitely think screen time limits are important, right? I think as parents, you know, that are working, whether in the home or outside the home, it's easy to lose track of some of those things. And a lot of devices come equipped with the ability to just go ahead and set the screen time limits in advance. So you have a really good idea of how much screen time your children are taking in. And, you know, also I encourage parents take into consideration the amount of screen time that's happening during the school day as well. You know, I think it's a lot more the part of the school day for kids. And certainly some of that's unavoidable and can be helpful, but just something to keep in mind as kids bring those tablets and laptops and things home from school with them, just understanding what the expectations and guidelines are for those things.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, it's all based on your own personal family values regarding screen times and social media usage. You know, social media has its purposes, right? But it does have a very negative side effect with it too. What you're looking at is that snapshot of perfection and how easy it is to think that's the unrealistic expectation of what life actually looks like. And especially with our teenage kids, because they see that and they think, well, that's reality. Mm-hmm. When in fact, again, it's just a snapshot. It's not what life really looks like. it's that perfect moment.
Absolutely. I think it's so important too to have the conversation with your kids about why you want the screen time structure, right? It's not just to control things. It's truly an ongoing conversation about boundaries in relationships and how much access we give people, you know, that don't live in our home with us to our personal life. So I think that's definitely important. The other thing is, I think, and I hear from a lot of teenagers is, you know, all my friends are doing this. And there's probably truth to that. You know, I've heard that in my own home. I've heard that from other kids around. There are a lot of things that peers are doing, but again, reiterating with your children, you know, this is why we have these expectations or these guidelines, you know, talking to them about who their friend requests are from or who they're adding on certain apps or who they're talking to. I really don't think it's about control. I think it's about your children's safety and overall well-being.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to encouraging those outside activities of like support on social media is real, but how much, I guess, in a sense, better social support in real life can be as well, and not neglecting that aspect of life either, is involving yourself in those outdoor activities that aren't necessarily related to screen time or social media, you know, sports, peer programs, different things like that, or just hanging out with your friends at a park in person. Yeah.
So very true. And it just leads right into my next question. I mean, obviously, kids having screen time takes away from the personal interaction mm-hmm. that they have with others, with parents, with family members. So how can parents encourage open conversations with teens? That's kind of a time where they tend to maybe even pull back from having open communication with parents. We want to open that up.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, yeah, you made a great point. And I think even Mary Claire had mentioned this last week when we talked about, you know, you want to create those opportunities and not force the conversation. And then when you are speaking to the teenagers, you want to validate and not necessarily instantly fix their problem, right? You want to validate how they're feeling, but also encourage them to fix their own problems.
I agree with that completely. I think as parents, sometimes we want to look for a solution out of love and care for our children. And ultimately, I think we did talk about it last mm-hmm. week, but the best way for the child to build a resilience is to have some opportunities to problem solve. Right? We know that mom and dad are going to be there to, you know, fall back on or to offer support, to offer guidance. But it's like, I'm going to let you have this opportunity to figure it out. You know, tell me what options you think are a good idea right now. You know, what things come to mind when we think about this problem? What feels like it would be a solution to you? You know, asking them, getting their brain to start working in that aspect of problem solving is so key, even from like a young age, I think.
Oh, for sure. And I think you said the right thing too, allowing them to problem solve, but with the support of you behind them. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you're not helping and doing it for them, but they know you're there to help if they do hit that roadblock and they're like, where do I go from here? They still can come back to you. And how important it is for them to learn it now while they're in that safe space.
Right. And that's empowering for kids too, when they have worked through a problem mm-hmm. and kind of get to the other side and think, yeah, I did that. And I helped come up with the solution. I think that it, you know, goes a long ways too.
Yeah. And again, it's not about forcing that conversation. And I treat teenagers. I don't have teenagers yet. My kids are a little bit younger, but I know as a teenager, when I was a teenager myself, you can't force those conversations. And sometimes it's a matter of leaving it open of like, hey, I'm here when you're ready to talk.
Mm-hmm. So very true. So let's talk about when people need to seek help. At what point should parents consider reaching out to a school counselor, pediatrician, or like yourselves, behavioral health providers?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, because I think we talked about this too last week about, you know, what's the difference between back to school jitters versus something that's more. And I think definitely length of time can be a guide. You know, those back to school jitters, they're going to be dissipating within the first couple of weeks of school getting back. If it's lasting for longer periods of time or it's interfering with day to day functioning, I think at that point it's fair to reach out. And with your teenagers, ask them, you know, incorporate them into that decision as well of like, do you feel like we need to reach out to somebody at this point?
I like that. I actually just read something this morning that was talking about how the best thing you can do for your own healthcare is reach out to healthcare professionals when you're healthy. And it kind of made me stop and think for a second. And I was like, well, what's the idea there, right? It's about prevention, right? When we think about some of the most key things that help brain health, mental health, just overall well-being of physical activity, you know, sleep, adequate nutrition, the relationships and the people you're connecting with, a lot of those conversations can be started when we're not in that crisis mode. Mm-hmm. So I think about for kids, having the conversation with them of like, maybe we add another support person into your life. You know, mom and dad are here to support you, maybe grandparents, maybe friends, aunts and uncles, whoever it may be. But let's start that conversation and see what that would look like if that's something you're interested in. Because I know for Julie and myself, I know a lot of other clinicians out there treating teenagers, it's not always, you know, jumping to a medication or to a treatment. Sometimes it's just having a conversation. It's saying, you know, asking some basic questions, doing a check-in, you know, having these basic conversations, getting that started when you're young and learning that I don't have to wait until I'm in crisis to ask for help or to put someone else on my support team. I think that's huge.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you bring up a good point too, especially with the teenagers. Sometimes they do not want to talk to mom and dad. Mm-hmm. Surprise, surprise, guys. But it's nice to have a third party person, like you mentioned, to be able to come in that they know, that they trust, that they can then have those conversations with, you know, and playing that safety game of like, you know what? Yeah, you can go to this person and they're not going to bring it to mom and dad unless there's a safety concern, right? And having that third party person that they can feel safe to go to and talk to can be so important.
Very, so very true. So what treatments or coping strategies have the two of you found to be most effective for children and teens experiencing anxiety?
Treatment is individualized to each person. So it's going to depend per case by case basis what that looks like.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. I think it's so different for every child, every adult. It's just going to depend on the person. But I think there's a lot to be said about some basic coping skills. I know a lot of the times when teenagers and children come into the office and they maybe have been experiencing anxiety, they haven't really heard or been exposed to some of the things they can do to help, right? There's some really basic things that we like to talk through and work through before we will start a medication or before we jump to other ideas. And sometimes that can just be helpful, just learning some basic coping skills. Obviously, medications exist for a reason. We like to use them when we need to, and they can be really helpful tools. But again, I always tell my patients, these are all just tools in the toolbox. We can try so many different things to accomplish the same end goal of helping you feel better and manage your anxiety in a healthy manner.
Yeah, I agree completely. And then kind of going back to the fact that you were talking about just tools in the toolbox of like, and what you had talked about just the question previous about practicing these when we are healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's so important. I think that's so important. And also, you know, it's not... With anxiety, I always like to reiterate to my patients, it's not always the disease or the problem itself, right? It sometimes is a warning sign. It's that smoke alarm telling us, hey, there might be a problem. And you know what? Sometimes your smoke alarm at home goes off when toast is burning. You know, it's not always that the house is burning down. Mm-hmm. We appreciate those warning signs as something to check in and say, what is my body trying to tell me that I need right now? You know, and so I like to think of it that way, you know, kind of thinking long term, does this make a difference, you know, with mental health when kids come in and when they talk about it? I always like to say, I don't want the anxiety itself to become the thing that we're then anxious about, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, let's manage this and learn that it's not sometimes the monster in the closet that we think it is. It's actually something that we can overcome. And a lot of the time it has to do with our brain, you know, wanting control over the unknown. And so it's like, if we can learn these skills, like Julie said, when we're healthy, mm-hmm. of how to manage that fear of the unknown, then we're going to set ourselves up for success moving forward.
Right. And I do like what you said there, because one thing that I've learned in my training too, that I like to tell patients is there are no negative emotions. There are just emotions. We all are meant to feel the emotions we're meant to feel. Anxiety oftentimes is we're learning something new or something unknown, like you mentioned, and that's scary for us. But it doesn't mean that it's automatically a problem or that it's bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that ties in a little bit too on, you know, when kids maybe feel down about something or there's, you know, little minor depression symptoms showing through. Sometimes that just means that we need to slow down or take a break. It's not always this, you know, immediate red flag. Again, it goes hand in hand with anxiety a lot, but sometimes just our body's way of telling us to pay attention and kind of that alert of like, hey, we might need to make a change.
Such good tips, you guys. That's great. Thank you. So let's talk about some of those maybe coping techniques that kids could use if they start feeling anxious at school. What do those look like? Maybe breathing exercises or what do you suggest?
Yeah, 100%. I think you nailed the head right there. Breathing exercises, number one. I mean, easy to take deep breaths, right? And I have stickers in my office. They're textured, which is kind of nice and adds a little extra fun component to it. But box breathing, right? And it is a square and it shows you to breathe in for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, breathe out for 4 seconds, and then hold for 4 seconds. And you do that for like 4 times and it will re-trigger your vagus nerve to just kind of take a breath and reset.
Yeah. I think with a lot of these coping skills, right, they're not magic. Mm-hmm. It's more just kind of about like allowing the brain to reset and maybe almost tricking your brain a little bit to get it to calm. So I think another coping skill I like to talk about with kids a lot is using things like I am affirmations. So maybe when, you know, you're at home and you're in a place where you can think, you know, you as a family come up with some things that, you know, the child would want to hear someone saying to them if they were in that moment of distress. Okay. And then maybe we write it on a note card. We put it on, you know, a sticky note in the backpack or somewhere that they can easily access that. And then when they're feeling stressed or worked up at school or a time they're away from mom or dad or whatever that looks like, they can come back to that. And it might be things like I'm capable or I'm able to feel these feelings and, you know, work my way through it. Or, you know, I'm able to get to the other side of this, whatever those things are that, you know, feel good for them. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there's grounding techniques, the 5-4-3-2-1, 5 things that you can see, 4 things that you can touch, 3 things you can hear, 2 that you can smell, and 1 that you can taste. And that's a good grounding technique to keep you in the moment, because oftentimes with anxiety, we're thinking about what ifs in the future. And so it's bringing us back into that present moment and being mindful of the now. And kind of just going into this, not every technique is going to work for you. So it's a matter of trying them out and finding the ones that do work for you.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah. And I mean, if you're an adult and you're listening to this and wondering what's helpful, and something I like to use is a little bit of physical activity. You know, that doesn't mean that in the middle of your workday you have to, you know, throw your workout clothes on and go to a class, but sometimes just getting some steps, what we refer to as bilateral stimulation, getting out for that 5 to 10 minute walk allows your brain to actually reset and kind of process information in a healthy manner. So that's something I use in my personal life. I encourage a lot of adults to do it. Could work for teens and children too, depending on the setting that they're in or, you know, where that's safe for them to do so. But really like that as a helpful tip and just allows a small break and time to reset from a stressor.
Yeah. And again, for like kids in the school day, we're given tasks and sometimes those tasks are so big. Breaking those tasks into smaller tasks, right? Breaking it down. Okay, what can I do first? Okay, let me just focus on that thing, not all the 20 steps that then follow. And then also too, asking teachers, asking counselors, you know, if we need to touch base with someone, touch base with those people during the day and saying, hey, I'm feeling just kind of overwhelmed right now. And I just need to talk to someone.
Mm-hmm. Really great information. And I love because it started with strategies for kids and just rolled right into adults because they, let's face it, they are strategies that adults can use too. And how great if kids can learn them at a young age and continue to apply those throughout their lives.
Mm-hmm. One thing I just want to add to this is, you know, if you're the parent that's listening to this, I think it's so important to model vulnerability to your kids. I remember being a child and, you know, it always annoyed me as a kid, but my mom would always say, it's okay to feel fill in the blank. So it's okay to feel tired. It's okay to feel hungry. It's okay to feel upset. You know, I think about that and now being an adult, I just repeat that and find that it's so practical. But right as we approach this new school year, I think it's okay to say, you know, it's okay to feel nervous, right? Mm-hmm. There's times as an adult where I feel nervous and that's okay. We're going to be able to, you know, talk through this and identify what those feelings are and work our way through. So I just encourage you, if you're the parent listening, model that vulnerability, show your kids that it's really okay to be in tune with those feelings. We're not asking for perfection. We're not asking for a certain level of performance or for them to come home every single day and say it's a great day. No, you know what? You're going to feel what you're going to feel, and I'm going to be here to support you on the other side of that.
Yeah, 100%. And kind of building on that too is like, they learn from us, right? Mm-hmm. So if you yourself are struggling, and we all struggle, I promise, I myself struggle time to time. You have to be able to be emotionally regulated yourself for them to learn that emotional regulation. So don't be afraid to say, hey, I'm feeling really frustrated right now, or I'm feeling really overwhelmed right now, and this is what I do to help myself, because they learn that from you as well.
Yeah.
Yes, we learn from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So as we look to close the program, just such good information. What's one message you'd like every parent and or student to hear before the school year begins?
I think my message for you guys would just be stay the course. That's something that I've always heard and has been repeated throughout my life. You know, routines take time. We've talked a lot about routines and implementing different values, different things. Give yourself grace. We're all truly learning as we go, not just the kids, right? The parents are learning too. Don't be afraid to tell your kids that, and truly just stay the course.
Yeah, I think that's great. And also, again, recognizing that anxiety doesn't automatically mean that something's wrong. Maybe we're learning something new. Maybe we're doing something outside of our normal routine, and that's uncomfortable for everybody. And that's the other thing. Everybody experiences anxiety, overwhelming, frustration, all the feelings. Everybody does. And if it becomes too overwhelming, there is help out there.
So let's make sure we talk about that. I'm thrilled, as I shared, to have Mary Claire and Julie here. They are mental health and nurse practitioners available to see patients. Where can people turn if they need more help?
So, I mean, obviously you can always start with your pediatrician. That's always a great first place because kids know them. Sometimes it's scary to meet new people, right? So you could always start with your pediatrician. Otherwise, here at Van Deese, it's easy as a phone call, calling the clinic and just saying, hey, you know what? I'd like to see one of your behavioral health specialists. And they can get you established with either myself or Mary Claire. I know I see children ages 6 and up. I see people in the Webster Clinic, but then I also do Thursdays, as you mentioned last week, in the Stratford Clinic.
Perfect.
Yeah. And I see patients half of the time virtually. So if telehealth is something that, you know, is interests you, after you do your initial visit in the office with me and get established, then we can look at virtual follow-ups. Otherwise, I'm happy to see patients here in the Webster City Clinic 2 days of the week as well.
Great. Mary Claire and Julie, thank you so much for being on the show today and talking about this important topic. As they mentioned, they are available to see patients. You can call the Webster City Van Deest Family Health Clinic at 515-832-7800 or go online to vandeestmc.org to schedule an appointment. Thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
And that will do it for today's edition of Focus on Health, brought to you by Van Deest Medical Center, where our focus is you.